Tell us a little bit about yourself and the real story behind Hinduism's impact on the Beatles. You know, if someone were to ask, you know, why are you a person who would know about that, what would you tell them?
Well, I spent 22 years in the ashrams of Maharishi Mahesh Yogi and 6 years on his personal staff. And he was the Beatles guru. So I had firsthand experience of what it was like to live with this spiritual master who was probably the most famous guru of the 20th century.
What made him so famous and so such a master?
Well, when Maharishi arrived on the shores of America in 1959, there was no meditation, there was no mantra, there was no yoga. These terms basically didn't exist in the West. And within 10 years, he made these into household words with a little help from his friends, the Beatles.
How did the Beatles first connect with Maharishi and become involved in transcendental meditation?
Well, it was Patty Boyd, who was George Harrison's wife. She saw a little ad in the Times of London. She went to a lecture in February of 1967, and she learned transcendental meditation, and it changed her life. She was so impressed with the results. She told her husband, George Harrison, about it, and he said, "Well, I want my own mantra." So they ended up going to see Maharishi along with the other Beatles on August 24th of 1967 in London at the Hilton. And then after that meeting, they were very favorably impressed with him. So they went to see him backstage and they said to him, "You know, we've been seeking a highly spiritual experience and we've tried to get it through LSD, but that isn't really working for us." And Maharishi said, "Well, then you should learn transcendental meditation. And as a matter of fact, I'm teaching a course starting tomorrow up in Bangor, North Wales, and you can travel with me on the train." So that's exactly what they did. They went to North Wales to learn TM, and they intended to stay for 10 days, but they only stayed for 2 days because, unfortunately, on August 27th, Brian Epstein died in London, so they had to get back to London. But Maharishi invited them to come to India, to Rishikesh, to his meditation academy. So they did. In February 1968, the Beatles went and visited Maharishi in India, and the rest is history.
And so they became very good friends.
Well, they became students of Maharishi, and they were very keen on studying meditation, experiencing these higher states of consciousness, and they really did a lot of meditation while they were in India. And it was a very creative period for the Beatles. In fact, they wrote at least 40 songs when they were there, and that ended up being the White Album. 30 songs on the White Album, basically all of those were written when they were with Maharishi in India in Rishikesh. So they were heavily influenced by him in their music.
And didn't they part ways? What were the reasons that the Beatles left Maharishi in a huff?
Well, actually, Ringo and Paul did not leave in a huff. Ringo left after 10 days because he couldn't handle the food. He had brought an entire suitcase of Heinz beans with him, but I guess he must have run out of the beans. And his wife hated the insects. It was in a jungle, the ashram, and there were scorpions and millipedes and centipedes, and she was terrified even of flies. But really the main reason why Ringo and Maureen left was because they missed their kids, who were 6 months old and three years old, very, very young kids. So they wanted to get back to London. As far as Paul was concerned, he was there with Jane Asher, who was an actress, and she had to get back to London for a theatrical commitment. So it was only John and George who left in a huff. And they left because of three reasons. And the main reason had to do with a film deal gone south. So they were supposed to make this film. They intended to make a film about Maharishi and Maharishi's guru and transcendental meditation. And Maharishi gave them exclusive rights to film in Rishikesh and to do this. But unfortunately, Maharishi had made the same promise to someone else. And the head of his organization in America arrived in Rishikesh along with a lawyer from Four Star Productions of Hollywood. And the contract There was a signed contract that said that they had exclusive rights to film Maharishi for the next 5 years. And then the film crew from Four Star Productions arrived in Rishikesh. And one morning, early morning, John Lennon opened the door to his bungalow. He was bedheaded, bleary-eyed. And what did he see in front of him in the courtyard was a cameraman and a director yelling, "Action!" So he and George were absolutely infuriated. They refused to leave their rooms. They didn't want to be two-bit players in someone else's film that they didn't even know about. And that was one of the main reasons that they left, because they felt that Maharishi was using them for publicity and that he had been using them all along.
And was that true?
Well, you know, maybe they were using him and he was using them. The reality is that they never paid him one penny when they were there. They were just guests of Maharishi, and they were learning meditation. However, Maharishi, in 1967, had made a record album that on the cover it said, "The Spiritual Teacher of the Beatles," and the Beatles had not given him permission to do that. And in addition, Maharishi kept promising ABC that he would do a special with the Beatles on television. And the Beatles kept saying, "We're not doing that special." And Maharishi kept on telling ABC that he would do that. So they were not terribly happy about that either.
So did any of the parting of the ways involve Mia Farrow at all or anything, or any of his followers in any other way?
Well, that's an interesting question. Mia Farrow left on March 7th. She left Rishikesh on March 7th because she had to go and do a film in London called Secret Ceremony with Elizabeth Taylor. And so she had left a month before John and George left. So she had absolutely nothing to do with their departure, even though there's this story that has continued, you know, throughout the decades that she was the reason the Beatles left, but it had nothing to do with her. However, there was a woman there from Brooklyn. Her name was Rosalind, and she was on the course. And she and Alexis Mardis, who she was having an affair with there at the ashram, she told everyone at the ashram that Maharishi had made a pass at her. And the Beatles were upset when they heard about that. They didn't really believe it at first. But finally, Alexis Mardis, who was an associate of the Beatles, who came there to India for the express purpose of getting the Beatles away from Maharishi, he said he insisted that it was true. He said that he had waited outside Maharishi's bungalow and that he had spied Maharishi trying to hug Rosalind. And so as a result, he somehow convinced the Beatles to leave, and he warned them that Maharishi would hex them with black magic, so they'd better leave immediately. So he quickly got the taxis, and they all departed in a big huff.
So what was life like for you when you were under Maharishi's tutelage for 22 years and then on his staff for 6 years?
You know, being with Maharishi was an amazing experience. He had this incredible charisma. There was this energy that would exude from him. You would feel like you were being loved in a way that you had never been loved before. There was just this love vibration and this, and really waves of bliss that came from him that you would receive by osmosis. And this is really traditional in India. Some people call it Shaktipat, some people call it Darshan. But it's an experience of waves of bliss. So that was what it was like to be near him. And because of that, I was on staff, on his personal staff for 6 years. And all of us who were on his staff were always competing to get into his room. So it was very intense. It was an incredibly intense experience. In fact, it was incredible seesaws, emotional seesaws from heaven to hell to heaven to hell. It was heaven when he placed his attention and love on me. It was hell whenever he would criticize me, or he would use a process that I call open ego surgery, which he did on his disciples. He said that he was the carpenter and his disciples were blocks of wood. So if you're a block of wood and you're going to be carved into something wonderful and magnificent, the carving is not really a whole lot of fun. So that's what it was like to be with Maharishi.
Wow. Going back to the Beatles for a minute, what was the meaning of the songs Revolution and Blackbird?
Well, Revolution was a song that, obviously, if you listen to the lyrics, it's about the revolution of the 1960s and all of that, and the anti-war movement, but it's much more than that because it's about something called the Maharishi effect. Maharishi always said that in order for the forest to be green, the trees must be green. In order for the world to be at peace, all the individuals in the world must be at peace. So his philosophy, his actual mission, his mission statement, and his the thing that he focused on his entire life was to create world peace by getting as many people as possible to meditate. And I think it's a very valid philosophy, because how are you going to have a peaceful world if you don't have peaceful people? So what he would do, in fact, he would send hundreds of people to crime-ridden areas and to war-torn areas, and then he would have his scientists go there and track what was going on in the area to see that the war was subsiding, that the crime rate was going down, and they measured the war, amazingly, by hospital admissions. So they did all these studies, and they discovered that, in fact, meditation did create waves of peace, and that it did change the atmosphere very, very quickly, and the wars and the crimes would go down. So it was this Maharishi effect is what John Lennon was talking about when he was talking about you got to change your mind instead. You know, it's Maharishi always said that you'll never create world peace through treaties, through negotiations, and certainly not through war, but you can create it by having peaceful people. So that's what John was talking about, change your mind instead in revolution.
What about in Blackbird?
Now, Blackbird, so when that song came out, Paul McCartney, at first, he said that was he was inspired by a blackbird that he heard early in the morning in Rishikesh. Well, I was in Rishikesh. I was there for 6 months the first time I went there, and I was with Maharishi at the ashram. And yeah, there were blackbirds. They were crows, and they were screeching. It didn't sound anything like the Tweety birds that are in that song, Blackbird. But in the song, they are actually blackbirds. But then, decades later, Paul changed his story about the song. He said that it was about black, meaning African-American, birds, meaning women, which is what they called females in the 1960s in England. So blackbirds. Okay, it's my favorite song on the album. It's an incredibly inspiring song. And I think it's about anyone who has a broken wing and needs healing. So it's a very healing song, and it gives me chills every time I hear it.
So it's about African-Americans being liberated, right?
Yes, that's the idea. African-Americans, female, specifically blackbird, being liberated. In fact, yes. Okay. That's what he said later. I mean,
I don't think
that was his original intention with the song. He wanted to create more gravitas. He wanted to attribute more profundity to the song. So that's what he did.
Is that why he changed the story?
I believe. I mean, that's just my theory.
Oh, okay.
Why else would he change the story, you know?
Right, right. Yeah. So how did you end up working for the Maharishi?
You know, I was so impressed with my experience of transcendental meditation that I immediately wanted to teach it. So I started applying for the teacher training courses. I was only 19 years old, and you had to be 24 and be a college graduate. So they kept rejecting me. I applied for the course that the Beatles went on. I did not know the Beatles would be there, but I applied, and I applied to 3 different courses. Finally, you know, fourth time's a charm, I was able to go to Rishikesh and study with Maharishi. Became completely enamored with his energy and with his teachings and everything about him. And I wanted so much to study with him, and became a teacher. And I was teaching transcendental meditation, was going to advanced courses. And I noticed that there was this thing called international staff, and the people on international staff were very close to Maharishi. So of course I wanted to do that. So I just went up to him and I said, Maharishi, I want to join your international staff. And he said, what you will do? And I said, I will do anything. And he said, okay, come, which is what he always used to say. And by the way, there's a song about that. It's called Everyone's Got Something to Hide Except Me and My Monkey. And that song is entirely consisting of expressions that Maharishi used to say. Come on. Anytime he'd want you to come visit him in his room or talk to him privately, he'd say, come on, or come. And then he would always say, it's such a joy, it's such a joy. And his third most favorite expression was, take it easy, take it as it comes. So John Lennon wrote that song, and it's completely Maharishi's words. And then because John Lennon was in such a huff about Maharishi, he never, ever admitted that that's what that song was. However, George Harrison did. He said that those were all expressions from Maharishi.
Okay, well, thank you so much. Is there anything else that you want to add?
Well, I think that Maharishi really influenced the Beatles, but Maharishi had a tremendous influence on the entire culture, on the entire society, and the entire world through turning people on to meditation, which now has become more popular than ever. There's approximately somewhere between 10 and 14%, depending on who you read, of people claim that they meditate in the United States. So, wow, that certainly wasn't true in 1959 when Maharishi first came to America.
Do you think that Maharishi was such an influence through the Beatles? I mean, since the Beatles were such a cultural phenomenon and he got affiliated with them, do you think some of his reach is due to them?
Absolutely. I mean, the Beatles are the ones that put Maharishi on the map and made him really popular. However, after John and George left Rishikesh in a huff, Maharishi became even more famous and more popular. He became incredibly famous. He was on The Tonight Show quite often. He was on Merv Griffin's show. He was on the cover of every major magazine, Life, Look, Time, Saturday Evening Post, Newsweek. He was everywhere. And he was even the butt of Johnny Carson's jokes, you know. He would imitate him and so on. So he was really became very, very famous, partly due to the Beatles, but then really everybody started meditation. They were lined up around the blocks, queued up to learn TM, literally. And that happened in the 70s. The 70s, early 70s to mid-70s was when it became incredibly popular. Maharishi taught 6 million people to meditate through 40,000 teachers that he trained.
Did you meet the Beatles?
I never met the Beatles because I was rejected on that course. But I have to say that Donovan arrived at the TM Center, and I checked his meditation one day in Berkeley.
How cool is that? Good for you.
Yeah. Wow. Mike Love used to come all the time because he was a big devotee of Maharishi, so he was always hanging around. Andy Kaufman was there, of course. Doug Henning. A lot of famous people were there that I met when I was with Maharishi, but I did not meet the Beatles. Prudence. I met Prudence. Mia Farrow's sister, dear Prudence.
Dear Prudence. Is that true that she didn't want to come out of meditation?
Absolutely. She did not want to leave her room. Yeah. And Maharishi asked John and George to just look in on her because he was concerned about her. In fact, everyone was concerned about her. She spent 5 days in her room without eating or drinking anything. And she had a major psychotic episode when she was there. However, the good news is, and the happy ending to her story, is that by going to Maharishi's bungalow every day, Maharishi just taking care of her and making sure she was okay and having her do yoga exercises every day right there in front of him, you know, just he was monitoring her progress. She ended up really happy and very stable and has had a wonderful life. She graduated from Berkeley. She became a Sanskrit scholar. She's an author. She's a yoga teacher. And she has a beautiful family. So it's a good end to her story.
Yeah. What's so good about meditation? Why it changes people's lives and some people wouldn't want to come out of it?
Well, meditation, I actually believe that meditation is the panacea of all ill. You don't have to practice transcendental meditation. There's many forms of meditation. As long as it takes you into that peaceful state within, meditation has actually been scientifically proven to improve so many things in your life, health on all levels, physical, mental, emotional, on all levels, meditation is really beneficial because of the fact it takes you to that state of inner peace and deep relaxation, and that releases and reduces stress and tension. So obviously it's going to improve your life.
How come more people aren't doing it then? But how come more people don't do it?
There's a lot of people that do it, which is amazing. Why don't more people? Because they have to take 5 minutes out of their day to just sit down and get quiet. They don't want to do that. They have so many addictions, too many addictions, like their phones and all the other distractions.
Is that what it takes? That's how you do it? You just kind of sit and get quiet?
Yes. As a matter of fact, here's an easy way to meditate. I'll tell you exactly how to do it. You just sit down, close your eyes. First thing is to just take a few deep breaths. I would say take at least 3 deep breaths and just get quiet, and then maybe take some more deep breaths and get even quieter, because the deep breathing will really take you into deep meditation. And then when you get into that quiet and centered state, then you do something that most people generally don't do when they meditate, and that is that you ask. You ask a question, or you ask for guidance, or you ask for inspiration. And then you just take another deep breath and you allow. You just open and allow, willing to receive, but not expecting anything. Just do what I call the do nothing program. That means do nothing, nothing, and less than nothing. And then the answer will come to you. The experience you've asked for will come to you. Whatever it is you've asked for, you will receive. Everything about what I teach, by the way, I do have 17 books in print. I'm a spiritual self-help teacher and an author. And everything that I teach is based upon this one principle, and that is ask and it shall be given unto you. I don't teach transcendental meditation. I teach another form of meditation. And people can learn it in my books, really. You can learn how to meditate by reading my books.
Thank you so much.